You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
The Bills have just made some roster moves. How about that? Nobody on PUP as of right now. Maybe that happens later today, maybe tomorrow, maybe not at all. That would be great if they don't have anybody there, but here's what they've done. They have signed wide receiver David White, originally signed by the Jags as a UFA after the 24 draft, and spent a season there. They've also signed tight end Matt Sokol. He spent 2024 on the Steelers practice squad, originally an undrafted free agent with the Chargers in 2019. He's been around a little bit, Matt Sokol. But notably, they've released a wide receiver. I believe it's, you say his name, it's Kelly Akiyari. But also, Jake Camarda has been released. He's the punter. Now, I actually will tell you, I thought Jake Camarda would win the punting job over Brad Robbins. I mean, you look at what he's done in the league so far. Jake Camarda actually twice with the Buccaneers was top five in the NFL in yards per punt. The question was, could he place punts? Could he be a guy that could really kind of do it in situationally? And maybe the Bills just felt, yep, we're okay. We have one punter, Brad Robbins. We're going to roll with him. I don't think that means Brad Robbins is guaranteed to make the 53. You could do anything at the end of camp where you feel like you need another guy. You go out there, you claim somebody, you sign somebody. But the Bills now down to one punter on the roster. That's Brad Robbins. All right.
Also from Ian Rappaport, the Bills have activated Landon Jackson from PUP.
So Landon Jackson is coming off the PUP list. There we go. All right. All of it adds up to a great time to bring in my buddy Matt Perino on the Wester Hotline. Shout podcast, of course, Ryan Talbot, Syracuse.com. Lots of stuff happening this morning as we get ready, Matt.
Man, I'm typing a mile a minute here.
I know, right? I feel bad. I'm like, Matt's probably got this news happening. He's got to report it and tweet it out. We're doing the show here, so it's all happening pretty fast here.
It's all good. A lot of fans immediately like, wait a second, this doesn't quite add up. I mean, a couple of our beat colleagues, mainly Joe Biscaglia, cough, cough, were setting up this punter competition for this summer, and now we sit here with Brad Robbins. But I think back a couple of years ago, if you remember, they brought in Sam Martin really late in the game. I mean, teams make roster decisions all summer long, all the way in the lead up to the start of the season. The Bills end up going through the camp and the preseason with Robbins and don't like what they have, then they can always look to the veteran market to bring in another guy.
Yep.
But he might have made an impression. Like, I haven't talked, we'll probably get to talk to Sean tomorrow about Robbins and maybe what he did over the spring to maybe at least win the job to go into camp, to not want to have that competition play out in the summer. But the Akiyari, the receiver that you mentioned that was released, I thought he struggled quite a bit in the spring just from his hands perspective. Like, they go through the individual work and consistently dropping balls. And I just feel like when the competition on the back end is so solid with guys like LaVisca Chenault and Tyrell Shavers and KJ Hamler, they're going to continue to cycle in guys. If you're not making plays or if you're not able to kind of do the basic stuff, you're not going to last very long.
Yeah, I just got a tweet here from a fan, getting connected with our fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Dalamana says, are we worried about punter situation in relation to Bass having a new holder? I do think there's a bit of an overreaction to that sometimes, but I do think it's also a solid question considering it's been something we've talked about. But now you get Brad Robbins, and that is interesting, right? Where you made the point, Sam Martin came in, late. It is a position that you don't want to be messing too much with the operation of the snapper, the holder, and the kicker. And I think that's probably why you want to get to a guy a little bit earlier rather than later.
And maybe they've just determined over the spring that, like, getting Robbins in place and maybe building a little bit of a rapport with Tyler Bass is good enough to send this into the summer. And they're saying, like, listen, maybe we take a little bit of a step back just from a punting perspective, but what could it mean for Tyler Bass? I mean, I know he's had Martin the last couple of years. I don't know what level of holder, to your point, I do think that kind of gets blown up a little bit. But I think continuity is important too. Like for Bass, building that like rapport, I think early on it was it Bjorkqvist or was he gone already by the time that Bass got into the league? I'm trying to think.
It's a great question. I think Bass came in after, if I remember right.
Okay. So, you know, either way, it's just one of those situations where the Bills are very calculated with these kinds of moves and putting guys in certain positions to be successful. And who knows? I mean, maybe Robbins came in and Chris Tabor, the new special teams coordinator, this guy's been around the league a long time. He knows what he wants in all of these roles. And maybe Robbins just did enough already to say, hey, we don't have to waste our time. Let's build the relationship with these two guys because we're so convinced that we like where we're at with him right now.
While I was in Italy, it was the Bills had placed Landon Jackson on PUP, and you were the person I saw that reported that the Bills, that he should be ready to go, that you were told, hey, according to your sources, that he would be ready to go for camp. And that looks like it's the case, Matt. They have activated Landon Jackson off the PUP list, which is good news.
I mean, it's nice to have a win every once in a while, right, Sal?
Yeah, that's right.
You never know these days with people saying people aren't good. I remember right before the start of minicamp, no shade to Adam Schefter. I like Adam, but like sometimes you get fed some bad stuff.
Yeah.
And I thought it was interesting today seeing Tom Pelissero come out with obviously the Cook side of things, right? Like probably pumping like what his representatives have been sending along. But I don't see, and not to get off of your point about Landon Jackson, I don't see the upside for a hold in for James Cook based on everything that he said during minicamp. Like at that, that was the point to really like make one final statement before maybe you could come back to the negotiating table. Now we're here. Now it's prep for the season. He talked about like building up, you know, being a leader and being somebody in the building and building that rapport with his teammates and that bond with the team as they try to go and win a Super Bowl, which James Cook said is important to him. And so I don't know what that would accomplish to help better the pursuit for that goal if he's to come and show up and then just say, yeah, but I'm only going to do this much. Like, I don't think that's going to necessarily be the ticket for him. Landon Jackson, I think this is a really big development because if he were to miss, like, even, like, four or five practices, the slower practices before they put the pads on, I think that would put him at a disadvantage. And we saw what happened to Cole Bishop last year when he missed a couple. So getting him back and healthy, you hope all of these young players are able to stay healthy. Max Harrison with the tweaked hamstring back in the spring. You hope that he's 100% going into this thing so the competitions can start to kind of unfold.
Matt Parrino here on the Wester Hotline. Bills open up training camp tomorrow at St. John Fisher. 9:15, Sean McDermott will speak to the media. 9:45, the team will be on the practice field. Then we will hear from Brandon Bean after practice. And yeah, let's stay with that with James Cook because I agree. That to me, that's still the number one storyline. But let's be honest, Matt, it could kind of go away tomorrow, right? If he shows up and just as part of practice and does everything, okay, he's a guy going to last year of his contract. This happens all the time, right? Not a big deal. If he shows up and he doesn't participate in everything, now we have a story on our hands, especially with Hard Knocks out there. So how much could this kind of swing one way or the other depending on everything that happens?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, you know, I never got the vibe. Like, it's hard to read James Cook, right? Like, when he's on the practice field, he's pretty much the same guy no matter what. I mean, he's not super over the top. Like, he's not super chatty. He's not super chatty in his availabilities with us either. So it's hard to get a read with him. It felt like, you know, when he showed up to minicamp, there was a little bit of a, I don't even want to call it an attitude, but just like a subtle frustration. When we spoke to him after practice and the questions started to mount, I felt the frustration a little bit in that as well. But he's kind of gone back. Like, I don't want people to get it twisted. I think James Cook is a great dude. Like, I actually think that, like, he's well-loved in the locker room. Like, guys want to play with him. Guys are rooting for him. Guys want him to get the deal. The part of the thing, the problem is just the way the NFL is structured. When you're paying your quarterback what the Bills are paying him, you only have so much resources to allocate elsewhere. They're paying two Pro Bowl / All-Pro level tackles almost top of the market money. They're paying an edge rusher, not top of the market money, but a pretty healthy contract. They signed a corner. They signed their middle linebacker. They signed their slot receiver. And by the way, their first-round draft pick at tight end, who's kind of the starter, right? His backup, quote-unquote, is making $12.5 million per season. So there's guys on this team that are making a lot of money, and I get the arguments for, like, the salary. You can do whatever you want with the salary cap. I've seen people bantying about this morning about a potential Trey Hendrickson deal. I've been on board with that since, you know, March. Like, find a way to get it done. Find a way to make it work. I think that that would be just a potential game-changing type move with all the other moves that they've had. I don't know if it's really doable, but it's just hard to fit it all in. And then if you're taking the stance that you want top-of-the-market money, when you want it, you're basically putting yourself into the category of Christian McCaffrey and Saquon Barkley. You have to ask yourself a hard question as the organization is, like, is he that level of player? Is he maybe a tier below, which is not bad, but it's just a tier below, and we just can't reach that kind of dollar amount year over year, especially at that position.
Do you agree with me when I say that I said earlier today, and you kind of touched on this a minute ago, when it comes to James Cook, like, what's the end game, right? What's it, if let's say he holds in. Okay, let's say he holds in. Like, what is it for? What's the end game? Because do you agree with me when I say that's not going to get Brandon Bean to suddenly bend over backwards and give him $15 million? That's not the way Brandon Bean operates, Matt.
He can't. Like, he can't go to that number. Like, we've all looked at all of this. There's extensions on the horizon. There's going to be other moves, like, coming up maybe next offseason that he wants to consider. And he's got a guy. Like, this comes back. I agree with both statements that you just made. Brandon Bean won't be, like, forced into anything. What is the ultimate – trying to figure out the ultimate end game of a hold-in is perplexing. Here's the other piece that I don't think we talk nearly enough about. Do I think Ray Davis is, like, the next coming of, you know, an elite-level running back? Probably not, but I don't think anybody truly understands what the team thinks of him, like how good he can be given a more featured role. If the Bills give a lot of those red zone carries to Ray Davis last year or play him even 10% more of the snaps and James Cook doesn't have that kind of breakout statistical season that he did, are we having a completely different conversation around this entire thing this offseason? The Bills believe in Ray Davis. They also believe in Ty Johnson. And there's also another thing that's really interesting. We're a year removed, and this three-headed monster in their backfield has been so good. We've kind of forgotten about Frank Gore Jr. There was people last training camp, if you remember, that were pounding the table for him to make the 53. So they have some talent in that room. I think that if James Cook isn't a part of this picture long-term, they can draft another running back. They could sign a running back. Ray Davis, get a look at that this year in probably a larger role. And then if he has to take the reins as the starter in 2026, I think you're comfortable with that if you're the Bills.
Matt Parrino here on the West Shore Hotline. Bills begin training camp tomorrow. Okay, let's talk about the other big storyline, which I think it's James Cook number one, and then, of course, what happens at cornerback two? It just seems like it's the only true competition for a starting job on either side of the ball. How do you think this starts, at least at training camp?
I think it starts with Tre'Davious White and Christian Benford, and I think that he has a very solid understanding of the coaching staff, the system, and what's needed and necessary. And almost in a way, I think the Bills would want to position it like this, like, hey, rookie, Maxwell Harrison, take notes, right? Like, watch this guy for the first week, and you're going to get your opportunities. But this is how it's supposed to be done. Because I think from a practice, preparation, getting your body right perspective, especially after the two injuries, there's no better teacher than Tre'Davious White could be, and then also Christian Benford, right, like on the other side. So that's the first piece of it. I think there'll be some watching, some teaching, some taking it slow. But I really do think, and maybe this is more of what I think should happen than predicting what will happen, because I think it's going to be a true competition. They're going to go with what the best option on day one. The Bills have had to have had conversations pre- and post-draft about, all right, what's the deep dive on Kyer Elam? Why didn't it work? What could we have done differently? And then it's about implementing now with another chance at a first-round cornerback that is a different style of player than Elam. Fast, but a more zone-heavy corner in college as opposed to the press-man-heavy corner that Kyer Elam was. Let's figure out a way to put him in a position to be successful and to get him on the field somehow in year one in a prominent role. And the one thing I will say is, like, you know what you have in Dane Jackson. – If Tre'Davious White wins the job, he struggled to stay healthy over the last couple of years. So that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be any long-term starting type situation. And maybe you get to a point where maybe he doesn't start the season, Hairston, but maybe he's in a rotation and you get to a point where he wins the job based on how he plays and performs, which I don't think Elam ever really did enough in any of the 3 years. While he played well at times, and I've said that, I'm on the record saying that, I don't think he ever had a stretch that forced the coaches to keep him on the field. And I think that they may look for that from Hairston if he's in a rotation or even if he's got to earn it in practice if he's not playing.
The only changes on the offensive side of the ball are the two wide receivers. Out are Mac Hollins and Amari Cooper. In are Joshua Palmer and Elijah Moore. I mean, Joshua Palmer's on this team. They gave him a nice contract. They target him early in free agency. Not necessarily Elijah Moore. It came after the draft. They gave him some money, some guarantees, not a huge contract. How do you handicap, you know, where that wide receiver group looks, especially thinking the top five, Shakir, Coleman, Palmer, who am I missing there? And Curtis Samuel, you can even throw him in the mix, and he's got some money there. It would cost him quite a bit of money to move on from. How do you see that group right there beyond the top three at least?
I mean, I like the group. I think the addition of Moore to that group now makes it really interesting, and it's going to be hard for guys like Laviska Shenault and KJ Hamler, Tyrell Shavers to make a run at a roster spot, although I think all three of those guys will be competitive and they'll place them in competitions. Moore to me is like a bit of an X factor. I think before his signing, you could see a lot of what the Bills did with this room and by what they didn't do. You know, bringing in Josh Palmer and what they're hoping is a supercharged version of what they wanted Amari Cooper to be last year. I know Palmer's never been the level of player that Cooper was in his prime, but that wasn't the Cooper they had last year, right? Even pre-injury, I don't know. He might have taken a step back. He never got back to 100% health. But in the big moments, the good moments for him on this team, not only did he put up a couple of big games, but his arrival coincided with the kind of ascension of Keon Coleman before his injury. And so those two things, Palmer's arrival, the separation, the route running, and what that can mean for Keon Coleman on the other side is big. You have one of the best, if not the best, slot receiver in the league in Khalil Shakir. Samuel is the just got to stay healthy. When he was healthy, he made plays in this offense. It wasn't always, you know, in a bunch of big targeted or big reception games, but he found a way to make some big plays, especially down the stretch last season. I thought he had a couple of nice moments. Moore to me is like, where does he fit in? Are you going to ask him to play all of the different positions and maybe get a little bit more creative with what you do with your personnel? Get Shakir on the outside a little bit more. Get Keon Coleman into more of that big slot role that a lot of, you know, film experts have said, even going back to the draft, that that's where he projects better in more of like a Chris Godwin type role. Joe Brady seems a little bit more open to that this offseason, and I wouldn't be surprised if we see a little bit more creativity with the personnel packages, but also with where they line up on the field and using them in different kind of alignments.
And then the last position that is really interesting that I think has become a bit polarizing is return spot. You know, I've been on record in saying, and I think, you know, I just think Brandon Codrington is the guy right there. Now, does it mean that he's absolutely guaranteed to be on the team? No, but if he's not, who's the returner? I mean, I could see a scenario where maybe an Elijah Moore could do it, but Sean McDermott really, he has proven you got to trust a guy back there. And they're not just going to keep a guy just because he does more than what Brandon Codrington does at corner, if that makes sense. You know, I don't think that's something the Bills will do. They want to make sure they have a guy there they can really trust. And up until the playoffs last year when he got hurt and he didn't have all the reps in practice and he couldn't be on the field, they didn't have an issue with Brandon Codrington. But how do you see this playing out?
That's a great question. I think in the end, my pre-training camp prediction is that he won't make the roster and they'll figure out a way to use that extra spot for somebody that's going to contribute elsewhere, because they can do a multitude of things. I mean, they can put Shakir back there. And for as good as Codrington was last year, and I thought he was good, I thought he was a field position weapon for the Bills at times. You know, I think Shakir is good too. Now, the question you ask yourself in that situation is, do you want to put Shakir back there and chance him getting, you know, hit extra times?
I just can't see it after the contract they gave him and what role he's going to play. You know what I mean?
Right. But also, like, if you've done these probably 53-man roster projections, like when you get down to the end of this thing, there are some really yep. tough decisions on linebackers. Do you keep five or six? Do you want to move off of Baylen Specter finally? Obviously, tight end is going to be three. The offensive line, do you want to keep 9 or 10 offensive linemen? We can make an argument that the offensive line group, like throughout all three positions, is the deepest the Bills have ever had.
100%.
And they have some really tough decisions at the bottom of that of those roster battles. So it's a great question. I think Codrington is somebody that they obviously valued enough to give up draft capital to go get last year, and he looked the part for them a season ago. I think he's gonna be tested. I think they're going to give a lot of different looks to some guys throughout this spring or the summer, and then see where you're at the very end, where you're at injury-wise. That's another piece of this that we can't project, and then make the decision based on that.
Yeah, it should be fun. It should be interesting. What are you looking forward to most, being out at camp, and how often are you going to be staying out there versus coming home?
I'm going to not be out there as much as most years, only because I got to come back for some baseball stuff,
yep.
and we got a little trip coming up in the middle of camp. Birthday trip for my son,
nice.
Which is actually locked down. We haven't revealed that to him.
Oh,
yet,
okay. So we'll keep it. Nobody's listening. We'll keep it.
Thank
quiet.
You. I appreciate yeah. it. But no, I'm excited. I need to get my milkshake from the dairy. We got to get over to the pub a couple times. It's awesome. I just like connecting with Bills fans. We have a live event, as I know you do.
Yep.
There, which I think is a great way. I went to yours last year, hoping to get to it this year. It's just a great time for the whole Bills community, media, fans, everything to just kind of come together and hang out. It's a 2-week party in Pittsburgh.
So a couple months ago, I told our buddy Sal Marana about, you know, taking Max to the Yankees game and how he didn't and like, oh, like it was a surprise. Like I didn't tell him it's a surprise. So he comes on the air, speaking of what you just did, he comes on the air and he's like, oh yeah, and I know you're taking Max to the game. I'm like, no, he doesn't know. He doesn't know. And it went over the radio, right? And I'm like, now somebody at school's gonna be like, oh, I heard you're going to a Yankees game. Thankfully, like, no one said anything. He wasn't listening at the time, but, you know, he was at school on that day, but that didn't happen. So whenever everything happens, it's gonna be great. I love it for you. I also love the fact I saw that your team won, what, the Grand Island tournament when I was away? Is that what it was?
Yeah, we won one of the brackets. That was
yeah.
really cool.
That's awesome. One of the brackets.
That was a
yeah.
nice moment for him. Yeah, that was really fun.
Awesome.
It's been a fun summer, man. I'm ready for football season now.
Yeah, me too. Tell everybody where they can find you and Ryan and everything else you guys are doing.
Yeah, the best place to find us is over on X. Probably that's where everything funnels, at Matt Parrino. The Shout Podcast is on all platforms, video, audio. We got that text insider line. I put a tweet out about that today. We're doing a special insider-only Q&A tonight. Get everybody jacked up for training camp. So 2-week free trial, go get that. Appreciate you having me on, buddy.
Yeah, you got it. And make sure you're listening to the next segment because Pat Hammer is going to tell you how to dress for the next week, okay?
Beautiful. Appreciate it.
You got it. All right, Matt Parrino right there. Thanks a lot. Matt Parrino on the Wester Hotline. Patrick Hammer, WGRZ-TV2 Chief Meteorologist. Are you going to training camp, everybody? Are you heading out to Rochester? Do you live in Rochester? Are you wondering what the Bills are going to be dealing with as far as any heat is concerned, any rain, right? We have to think about that. If you have tickets to a training camp practice, it's all very important. And that's why Pat Hammer is going to join me next on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
Stop. Hammer time.
Oh, yeah. It is that time. It's Hammer time. We're going to be hearing a lot more from Patrick Hammer during the regular season, of course, but no better time to see what's going on out in Rochester, out in Pittsburgh, the weather for training camp, whether you're a fan that's attending or a player or coach, want to know what it's going to be like on the field. Pat Hammer joins me right now on the Wester Hotline, WGRZ-TV2 Chief Meteorologist. It's been a little while, buddy. How are you?
I am fine. I'm living vicariously through you and your exploits and your travels and, you know, keeping up with you, man, that's a full-time job in itself, you know?
I can't even keep up with me sometimes, to be quite honest with you. But yeah, we had a great, great time. You ever been over there? You ever been to Italy?
Many years ago. Yeah. I did Rome like you did, Naples. I did kind of the South, went to this island called Capri, which is off the coast of Naples. Again, this was back way a long time ago, but just like you said, I heard you talking how old means a whole different thing over there. When you're looking at the Colosseum and all of that, and it's like, oh, this is like thousands of years old.
It's amazing. It really is. We did the North on this one. I've been to the South. I've been to Naples and went to Pompeii a couple of years ago. Yeah. This time was mostly Rome. And then we went up to Florence and Perugia. And then over to, I had never been to Venice or Lake Como. I did not. First of all, I did not see George Clooney, for everybody who asked. Yeah, Lake Como.
That's the first thing. That's the first thing you think about when you think of.
Yep. No lake. Doubt. No doubt. But boy, Venice. It truly is amazing to watch a city where it's just boat traffic everywhere and no streets.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, and just the design of the city and how it functions and how, you know, did you, one of the things that we're hearing though is how, what's their vibe towards tourists? Are they glad to see you there? Are they happy or do they think it's too much when they have a lot of tourists?
So it's interesting you say that. Obviously it's a lifeblood, right? Of the economy, yeah. But the biggest issue, we heard this a couple times from a couple people, is there's so many like tourists now and it's getting so expensive. A lot of the natives are moving away and that's really hurting them. And they wish, in a lot of these little cities, in a lot of these towns in Italy, it's becoming like they're kind of losing their original identity of the people, if that makes sense.
Right.
You know, and that's tough to see, but I understand. When people are coming in, the prices get jacked up, and the people who are living there can't afford to live there anymore, and they grew up there, right? That's their hometown.
Yeah.
And, you know, the people are coming in from out of town, but yeah, I mean, they also, you know, rely on a lot of the tourism. It was a great time. It was hot, as you can imagine. July in Italy is always really hot.
Yeah.
And you come back here, and it was hot the first day, then it got a little cooler yesterday, and then we're ramping back up. So let's talk about what it looks like out at St. John Fisher, at least for the next several days, if not over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, well, first, you just wish camp could have started yesterday because this is not, you cannot get more weather perfection than what's happening right now. I mean, this morning I would even call it refreshing and reinvigorating. It was in the 50s and highs in the 70s, no humidity. It's just perfect. And it makes you realize that summers around here can just be the best weather anywhere. Yeah, that's not going to last. The heat builds starting with the first day of training camp. So whereas Rochester today is in the upper 70s, tomorrow, mid to upper 80s, I think the worst of the heat, if you want to call it that, comes after practice, which is a good thing. But Thursday's the day that it's going to be stifling. That's when you get the heat. It's going to be in the low to mid 90s in Rochester. And then the humidity, it's going to have that heat index, you know, that how it feels could be closer to 98, 99 Thursday afternoon. So that's going to be the hottest day. As we head into, I don't know exactly the camp schedule, but I believe they have Friday, Saturday practice and not Sunday.
No, they're off Saturday. So it's 3 days and then a day off and then 3 days. So you got Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, off day Saturday, back on the field Sunday, Monday, Tuesday.
Okay. So, yeah, starting tomorrow, it's going to get warm. The hottest day Thursday. It stays in the 80s on Friday. There, in terms of rain chances, the one day that you might have to navigate a little rain would be Friday. Mm-hmm. That has a thunderstorm chance. You know, I went back and looked at the last four training camps since COVID, when they, of course, were here in Orchard Park. And every camp has had one, but at the max 2 days of rain to deal with. It's just kind of one of those things. You're going to get one day that a thunderstorm rolls through. The best camp ever was the camp 2 years ago when it was in the 70s and 80s, all camp long, no 90s. Hmm. Last year was brutal. It ended very, very hot. It was a very hot camp. This year, it's looking like it's kind of trending that way because into next week, you're going to keep the heat at least through Wednesday, Thursday. But, you know, looking way down there, I see a weather situation not too dissimilar with what we're dealing now for the game, the scrimmage that they play a week from Friday back here in Orchard Park. The weather then looks like it's going to get more like this again, which is a good thing.
Okay, good. So you mean like a little bit cooler, not as humid. You're not talking about like storms and everything like that, like anything
like
that on the horizon.
I think it's going to be a week of heat and then followed by a transition to something that admittedly last week, I think you might've been out of town still, it felt like a touch of fall. Ooh. Like Thursday, Friday, it was crazy. It just, it's mid-July, and it just felt like, well, it kind of felt like that way this morning. I think we're going to trend that way towards the second half of camp, including the return, you know, the scrimmage.
I mean, return of the red and blue, I think.
Red and blue. Thank you. Not the blue and red. Red and blue. I think it's going to be pretty comfortable as we head towards that Friday and then the following weekend.
Pat Hammer, WGRZ TV2 Chief Meteorologist on the West Her Hotline. All right, so when the schedule came out, we kind of had this broad overview of what are we looking at? Yep. That time, kind of this kind of time of year, that time of year in these cities. We're a little closer now. I know you can't specifically predict what it's going to be like week one, but what have the models or the patterns kind of suggested maybe as we're getting closer to September?
Well, as you look at the schedule, you realize that there's a lot of opportunities for wintry games towards the end of the year. You have, the last quarter of the season. You've got, most of the games are in this direction, right? You've got Cincinnati, you've got Pittsburgh, you've got New York, of course, New England.
Every game the Bills play except for one is East Coast time, Eastern time zone. And they're all indoors. I'm sorry. They're all outdoors at the end of the season like that. Yep.
Which opens the door for, weather impact games, if you will, towards the end of the season where maybe it's things are, getting a little tight with the race, if that's how things go. So right now, that's going to be kind of our focus. Things look, either things could go either way in those late fall games. But as you head into mid-November and beyond, that's when things could get a little dicier. And right now here it is midsummer, but there's a couple of little things that we're seeing. Nothing that's going to dictate where exactly we think the winter is going to go. But a couple of little signals are beginning to emerge that suggest. I know you and I have talked about El Nino, La Nina, and it seems like every year there's one or the other. It usually is the case that our coldest winters or maybe snowier winters are when you have what we call La Nada, meaning it's neither an El Nino or a La Nina. You're kind of in what's called the neutral phase. And that's where we're potentially headed, which could open the door for maybe a cooler winter than we've had over the last couple of years, and maybe a snowier one as well. So that's something we're looking at. There's the other thing is, if you ever get into not a strong La Nina, which we had 2 years ago, a weak La Nina, whether it's a weak La Nina or neutral, no El Nino nor La Nina, that's when you tend to get the colder, snowier winters here. Mm. So I'm not saying that's going to be the case, but that's a signal we're beginning to see, 4 months before the snow arrives.
What about before that? A lot of home games early in the season, right? I mean, you got you got week one at home, and then they go on the road, and then they come right back at night game on Thursday, a night game on a Sunday, and then a Sunday afternoon night game. I'm sorry, a Sunday afternoon home game as well. Have the models shown anything about where we might be early on in the season?
Well, first of all, you look at what's going on across the country now.
Yeah.
Every newscast that you see or every, social media news breaking thing, it's about flooding, right? Mm-hmm. There is just flooding here, flooding there, rain everywhere. Texas, which is usually baking in the summer, is just, having these horrible flood situations. What's interesting, though, is that it's wet everywhere, but not here. It's been incredibly dry, believe it or not, here in Buffalo. For the month of July, we've had a quarter of an inch of rain. That's it. Usually you can get that in 10 minutes. We haven't had that in the first 21 days of July. So what we're seeing is that this summer is behaving very differently than last summer or the summer before. So what does that mean in terms of late summer, early fall-like weather? I just have a hunch it's going to be different. It seems that heat does not want to lock in across. We've had some hot days, mm-hmm. but we haven't had any sustained heat here.
Right.
We haven't had any perennial wet periods. I know we all think that we had this horrible spring. Yeah, it was kind of wet in May and June, but it wasn't awful. And quite frankly, since the calendar flipped to July, hey, go play golf. Hit a drive. Hit the fairway. You're going to get an extra 100 yards on your drive right now because it's so dry. It's And what that means is that there's an opportunity for the early part of the football season. You know, it's hard to give it a definite. I just don't see any sustained heat around here building for August into September, if that's kind of any link to what happens when the season starts. I just think this may be the peak of our summer heat in the next 5 to 7 days.
Pat, I will play in a desert if it means an extra 100 yards on my drive. I just want you to know
if
that.
If you hit one of those worm burner drives, man, you're going to go forever, right?
Yeah, no kidding,
The fairways are literally, I mean, I'm walking, my backyard, I feel like walking on my lawn is like walking on cornflakes right now.
Honestly, same thing. I came back from Italy, have been gone for 10 days, and I'm like, oh, the grass. I look, I'm like, it's not that bad, and it's super dry. I need to water it, actually. It's been so dry.
Right. Yeah. There are areas in our area, you know, the hills of the Southern Tier have been fine, but from the South Towns to Buffalo to Niagara Falls to Clarence to Batavia, it has been everywhere is wet across the Great Lakes and the East and the Southeast, but the Eastern Lakes is one area that's been dry, and that's us.
All right, buddy. Well, listen, we're going to be talking a lot more, I'm sure. And as you know, over the next couple of months, we're getting there. We're here. It is training camp time. So enjoy it and keep everybody updated, as I'm sure you will.
All right. So I look forward to it. And we'll keep an eye to the sky on Friday. Some feisty little storms may move through camp.
Okay. We'll definitely keep updated there and let us know if anything we need to pass along there. And we'll do that for you. Thanks a lot, buddy.
Sounds good. All right.
You got it. Take care. Yeah, I didn't talk with Pat about this because, you know, we didn't have enough time. But I will say, too, it's been a very, very inactive tropical season. I know we're only in, like, late July, but even by now, usually, you might have something out there. We haven't. I mean, a lot of times, hurricanes, when they actually form, aren't until August. I learned a little bit of this when I was in Florida for a while. They could be very early, too, but, like, Hurricane Andrew didn't hit until August, and that was right, many years ago. So you can have that. But I found it interesting that there hasn't been much in the tropics, like, at all through June and July. So you hope that's the case, you know, that you want to stay that way because these things can be devastating. But, the weather out at training camp is going to be hot tomorrow to start, Thursday, I should say, to start. And as he said, maybe keep an eye out of the skies, maybe a storm or two rolling in. I don't think it's anything that should impact, like, you know, practice and going out there. If you have tickets, people have asked me about that, but I think we're okay there. But of course, stay updated. We'll let you know if anything changes as far as anything with practice and times and weather and all that here on WGR. WGR550.com as well. The Bills open training camp tomorrow. We'll come back. We'll wrap up your Northtown Extra Point Show. One more segment left before training camp officially begins tomorrow, the next time we talk. Okay, it's all here, folks. We're ready to rock and roll. It's training camp time. Let's go. Man, it's been a long time. Let's think about it. Season ended, and of course, it was very, very depressing once again, right? You have these off-season press conferences. We're hearing about all the different things that need to be done, things they need to do. Guys getting bigger and stronger. Guys are coming from injury. How are you going to improve the roster? Everybody's depressed about it. You're watching the Super Bowl. Ah, come on. Kansas City Chiefs, Philadelphia Eagles, they win it. Then it's the Senior Bowl. All right, well, you know, who are they looking at? Maybe going to draft one of these guys. We got a long way to go. That was January. Then the Combine happened at the end of February. Remember the Combine? It didn't seem that long ago. It's February. Then we get the free agency. Free agency opens up. Bills sign Joshua Palmer. They sign Joey Bosa mid-March. You're like, all right, see what they're doing here? That was March. Then it was the owners' meetings. We hear from Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott at the end of March. And then it was the opening of workouts. No coaches on the field. Then it was the draft. Remember the draft? Yeah, end of April. We have Brandon Bean comes on WGR. That was very noteworthy. We know that. Then we get to rookie minicamp. Then OTAs. Then minicamp. Then Sal went to Italy for about 10 days because we had 6 weeks off from football. And here we are. It all starts tomorrow. Tune in bright and early. Jeremy and Joe will be on site at St. John Fisher. I'll join them at 7 a.m. Sabres Live up next. One Bills Live after that. Chauvin the Bulldog at 3. I'll join them at 5 today. And I'll be talking with you from the field at St. John Fisher tomorrow as Derek and Zach take over the Extra Point Show during practice.